You're listening to the N2K Space Network.
With over 8,000 threat hunters analyzing over 65 trillion signals daily, Microsoft works tirelessly with the federal government to keep our nation's data secure. This 30-year-plus partnership is driving mission innovation that is secure by design. Whether optimizing your existing defenses or tackling advanced threats with AI, Microsoft gives you the intelligence and the automation you need to defend at mission scale. Let's work together to stay ahead of emerging threats and secure your mission anywhere. Learn more at aka.ms/fedcyber. That's aka.ms/fedcyber.
Happy Monday, everyone. A key takeaway from the 39th Space Symposium last week for the N2K team was that space is growing exponentially across the globe. We saw more international companies promoting their products in the exhibit hall and more international partnership agreements on the event sidelines. There were a few notable absences, though, the big one being China. For obvious reasons, I guess.
T-minus 20 seconds to LOS Egress. Go for deploy.
Today is April the 15th, 2024. I'm Alice Karuth, and this is T-Minus. China launches a new commercial Earth observation satellite. Tiandu 1 and 2 successfully demonstrate Earth-Moon transmissions. Interstellar and Deorbit sign a framework agreement for launch services. And our guest today is Dr. Craig Brown from the UK Space Agency. Maria caught up with him last week at the Space Symposium to discuss the space ecosystem across the UK. We'll also check in with UK-based launch company Skyrora, so stay with us for the second part of today's show. Let's dive into today's intelligence briefing, shall we? And although they may have missed the big international space event last week, China continues to make the headlines with their launch and satellite capabilities. A Long March 2D vehicle launched the SuperView Neo-301 remote sensing satellite from the Jiajuan Satellite Launch Center in Gansu Province, China, earlier today. According to the China Aerospace Science Technology Corporation, or CASC, the satellite entered the planned orbit and will, quote, provide commercial remote sensing data services for emerging scenarios such as digital agriculture, urban information modeling, and live 3D, as well as traditional fields including land surveying, mapping, disaster prevention and mitigation, and maritime monitoring. The satellite is part of a planned 28-vehicle constellation. All SuperView satellites have been sent into sun synchronous orbit since they started launching in 2016. And staying in China, the test satellites Tiandu 1 and Tiandu 2 have successfully carried out experiments demonstrating their Earth-Moon transmission and routing. The two satellites were sent into space together with the Keizhou 2 relay satellite in March. Results from the experiments imply that the project could improve the accuracy for spacecraft in determining lunar orbit. In addition, the Tiandu spacecraft has captured and sent back Earth-Moon group images. China says it plans to test satellite-to-ground laser ranging and inter-satellite microwave ranging methods. It's not clear if these tests were part of the initial demonstrations. The Tiandu satellite's mission is to inform the design of China's proposed Keizhou Lunar Navigation and Communications Array. The aim of the array is to support services for future lunar surface operations. Staying in Asia, and Japan's Interstellar Technologies has signed a framework agreement for launch services with Italian space logistics company Deorbit. Tokyo-based Marubeni Corporation, which invests in both companies, also signed a letter of intent in February 2020 to study the development of an agile satellite release system. This new agreement outlines both companies' commitment with the support of Marubeni Corporation to advance their business collaboration in the future. According to the announcement, the collaboration is expected to make a contribution to the supply of space transport services in the growing Asian space industry. Belgian-based satellite manufacturer Aerospace Lab has completed the acquisition of optomechanical systems company Amos. According to the press release, the acquisition marks a significant milestone for the two aerospace companies, jointly entering into a new era in advanced space technologies and opening new markets, respectively. OpenCosmos has been awarded a $3.4 million contract by the Institut d'Estudios Espacials de Catalunya, or IEEC, to deliver a fourth satellite for the Catalonia New Space Strategy. The satellite will join the Open Constellation, which means Catalonia will be able to benefit from the data of two additional satellites. Catalonia aims to use the satellite for environmental monitoring, disaster management, urban planning, water resource management, climate research, and infrastructure monitoring. The microsatellite will be five times larger than its predecessor and is scheduled to launch in 2025. NASA welcomed Switzerland as the 37th country to sign the Artemis Accords during a ceremony held earlier today at the agency's headquarters in Washington, D.C. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson and Swiss Federal Counselor Guy Parmelin, along with other officials from Switzerland and the U.S. Department of State, were in attendance. While we were all focusing on getting to the Space Symposium last week, a government contract for Relativity Space was announced. Relativity Space has been awarded an $8,765,000 fixed-price contract for real-time flaw detection in large-format additive manufacturing. The contract is being awarded by the Air Force Research Lab. Work will be performed at Relativity's Long Beach, California location using the company's Stargate 3D printing platform and is expected to be completed by July 2026. Earth observation company Satellogic has announced that its company has entered into a note purchase agreement led by Tether Investments Limited to the principal amount of $30 million. The net proceeds from the offering, after deducting transaction fees and other debt issuance costs, were approximately $27.6 million. The CEO and founder of Satellogic says that, quote, "The proceeds from Tether's investment in Satellogic will help advance our mission as we continue to focus on our U.S. strategy, the national security market, and our global space systems opportunities. Good luck to them." And we're ending today's briefing on a little doom and gloom. NASA's budget woes have been making headlines again. At the time of recording this program, we're expecting an update on the Mars sample return program, which is concerned that restrictions may shut down the mission. We'll bring you an update on that tomorrow. But the Washington Post is leading with concerns with the Chandra Space Telescope mission. If Congress approves the Biden administration's 2025 budget request for NASA science missions, researchers working on the Chandra mission say that it will be effectively terminated. Members of the national and global Chandra community have submitted an open letter with 87 pages of signatures to Dr. Nikki Fox, Associate Administrator of NASA's Science Mission Directorate, and Dr. Mark Clampin, Director of NASA's Astrophysics Division. They're aiming to rally support before the Chandra project must make, quote, catastrophic, irreversible layoffs to the mission starting on October 1st, 2024. And that concludes our briefing for today. Check out the selected reading section of our show notes for further information on all the stories I've mentioned in the show. You'll also find a piece making the case for a space guard in the US. And hey, T-Miners crew, every Monday we produce a written intelligence roundup. It's called Signals in Space. If you happen to miss any T-Miners episodes, this strategic intelligence product will get you up to speed in the fastest way possible. It's all signal, no noise. You can sign up for Signals in Space in our show notes or at space.n2k.com.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
I wouldn't be a very good dual nationale if I didn't have equal soft spots for the space agencies here in the US and in my native UK. So it was a privilege to stop by the UK Space Agency booth last week at the Space Symposium to meet with the Director of Investment at UKSA. T-Miner's host extraordinaire Maria Varmazis spoke to Dr. Craig Brown about the recent announcements around the UK clusters.
Hi, I'm Dr. Craig Brown. I am the Director of Investment at the UK Space Agency. I'm really lucky in that I run one of the largest teams within the UK Space Agency and also one of the most diverse portfolios. I look after our innovation program. So all of the companies that we're supporting to develop new products and services will tend to come through one of my programs in the early days. And I also look after the space ecosystem development team, which supports all of the clusters of activities around the UK.
Excellent. So we have been talking a bit about the clusters on our show a bit. And aside from just loving the word clusters, it's a great word. Tell me a bit about the clusters, please.
Yeah, well, so basically a cluster is a group of companies that have common goals, perhaps common market, and they come together in a geographical location. And collaborate with each other. And we see that there is a lot of benefit to companies that that kind of operate within a cluster of activity. And so what we've tried to do across the UK is help foster a number of different clusters of activity that have come out both organic growth within the space sector, but also in some instances like in Harwell, which is one of our main clusters of activity, which is centered around significant amounts of government investment into that geographical location. And perhaps without that government investment, that cluster wouldn't necessarily exist within that shape. But I guess clusters is quite an old-fashioned way of looking at things. And we're actually moving a little bit away from the idea of clusters and moving more towards space ecosystem development.
Ecosystem is a great word.
So for us, a cluster is an island, in a sense. And we want to move away from that. And actually, we do that quite well in the UK because each of our clusters has a certain strength. And a certain uniqueness.
So there's very little. Can you tell me about a few of them?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. So Harwell, as I've mentioned, is perhaps the kind of primary hub of space activity within the UK. It's centered around a couple of significant and historic UK government investments. So there's the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, which is one of the preeminent research laboratories within the UK with a strong interest in space. The European Space Agency's UK centre is based there. They look specifically at telecommunications and data applications. We also have a UK center called the Satellite Applications Catapult. The catapults are a network of centers that are set up along different industry themes. So the Satellite Applications Catapult is the space one that's in Harwell, but they cover a range of different things. They have high-value manufacturing. They have one looking at offshore renewable energy, one on compound semiconductors. So they're a really diverse group of centers in their own right. But the space one is in Harwell. So a lot of the companies that kind of move to the UK from outside will land in Harwell and start to kind of grow their presence in the UK from Harwell. And of course, the expertise that's kind of built up around space data, space applications, particularly around the Satellite Applications Catapult, that lends itself very well to a certain flavor of company that lands there. But then you've got other clusters around the UK. There's Space Park Leicester is the center of the East Midlands cluster. They have some really interesting specialisms in space instrumentation, but a lot of work on Earth observation. So a lot of companies interested in building out services around climate, for example, will find a real good home in Leicester. And then up in Scotland, we have a couple of clusters of activity around Glasgow and Edinburgh, which are looking at space data applications again, but also manufacturing of small satellites. And then, of course, in the far north of Scotland, you have a lot of activity around launch. So we have lots of different kind of activities that are kind of clustered, but offer a unique thing to the companies that want to set up around there.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned using the word sort of ecosystem.
Yes.
And to me, that signals something very interesting about the application of space data and just space applications across a broad variety of industry, but also the growth of the UK space sector. Already a proud heritage, a lot of fantastic application, but growing at such a fast pace.
Right, right. The space ecosystem for us is the cluster of clusters. It's about how do you network these clusters in such a way that instead of having a group of islands, you actually have this constellation of activity around the UK where we have clusters working with clusters to really build on the strengths that we've got across the United Kingdom. And I think that kind of really unique offer helps us to sell ourselves internationally so people can look at the UK and see us as a place where you can do pretty much everything from kind of building satellites to launching them eventually to then being able to build out the data applications and products that we all rely on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I was going to say, it also speaks very much to the utility of space for people who may not realize how much it touches in our day-to-day lives. Yeah,
that's the secret for us. That's why UK government's interested in this, right?
Yes, I would imagine.
So when we look at the contribution of space to the UK economy, you look at the space vertical market, it's worth around about £17.5 billion a year to the UK economy. A big chunk.
Big amount of money, yes.
Big amount of money and well worth supporting for that reason alone. But when you look deeper at the importance of space to society as a whole, and then you look at the economic impact of space to all of the different markets which it touches upon, it's around about a fifth of GDP in the UK, around about £370 billion a year. A fifth of UK GDP is fundamentally reliant on data that comes from a satellite.
Wow, now that's a data point.
Right.
My goodness. Jaw drop a little bit. That's quite amazing.
It's a big old chunk of money. And you know, when you think about how often, before you even get into the office, you've looked at your phone and looked at that little blue dot to try and get you from A to B, right? And how fundamental GPS and satellite navigation has become to our day-to-day lives, and just how many businesses that are not space businesses fundamentally rely on the logistics power of navigation. And the same is true for timing. So not a lot of people realize that the number of applications that we use require such an accurate timing stamp.
Things like financial stuff, indeed.
But even things as obscure as being able to manage the flow of utilities around the country, so that our gas system in the UK, for example, will use satellite timing signals to be able to manage its network. Our national lottery, for example, uses satellite communications. So when somebody buys a lottery ticket, that information is timestamped and is sent over a satellite to make sure that it kind of gets where it's needed. So that
I would never have thought of that.
So all of these little things that we do, kind of on a day to day that we would never even dream would involve a satellite, will quite likely have a satellite in the loop somewhere.
Absolutely. So looking forward, as the UK space ecosystem continues to flourish, what are you most excited about?
What am I most excited about? Well, I mean, I'm a space guy through and through.
I love
my industry. Yeah. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's to kind of grow our industry. We do a lot of work in the telecommunications area. Firstly, it's a big commercial workhorse for the UK. It's a real strength for the UK. And we're seeing such interesting trends in satellite communications at the moment, not least the interest in delivering services from satellite by traditional terrestrial operators. So our telcos that we're used to working with and getting our kind of mobile phones from are now starting to wake up to the importance of satellite, and the ability of satellite to deliver their service into real remote areas and wherever we are on the move outside of our cities. So there's a convergence happening between between space-based telecommunications and ground-based telecommunications. That's going to be super exciting, especially when we get direct-to-cell signals, right? And suddenly you no longer need to be paying $1,000, $10,000, $100,000 for a satellite user terminal. Actually being able to get those signals direct to your phone and then having five bars everywhere you go, like, it's the dream, right?
It's a game changer, yeah. Honestly. All of us who've been in a rural area going, I've had a flat tire in the Highlands once. That was not fun.
Not ideal.
Not ideal. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close out today?
Just thank you for kind of paying attention to what's going on in the UK, really, because I think, you know, I'm very proud of what we're doing in the UK. I think, we're not the richest spacefaring nation in the sense that as a country, we don't put huge amounts of money into our space sector, but we work really hard to punch above our weight. I think our approach to commercial space, I think, kind of sets us apart in that sense. And long may it continue.
We'll be right back.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.
Welcome back. As we've been talking to the UK Space Agency, it seems logical to also include Maria's chat with Nicky Finnegan from SkyRora. They're aiming to be the first commercial orbital company to lift off from the UK.
My name's Nicky Finnegan. I'm the head of communications and public relations at SkyRora, and we are a small launcher based out of Scotland looking to conduct the first vertical commercial launch from UK soil.
Fantastic. I've been following with great interest what you've all been up to. I think we last spoke probably around last summer, not with you, but someone else, I should say. So it's been a little while. I know a lot of things have been going on. So can you give us an update on what's the latest?
Yeah, so we're kind of step-by-step pushing forward with developing our orbital launch capability. Most recently, that's involved a collaboration with Viasat. So we did a ground test of their in-range telemetry system, which is an in-space telemetry system. And that will kind of enable continuous connection with the launch vehicle, which will be saving costs for customers mainly. So we did that in our Cumbernauld facilities, which is in Scotland, and that was a successful test. And we just announced that this week.
Oh, fantastic. Well, congratulations. Yeah, so I know that SkyRora has the ambition of, you know, doing the first domestic launch capability. You make the launch vehicles, that is. But can you tell me about like the long-term vision and sort of how it's going?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really trying to kind of deliver the government's objective of becoming Europe's leading launch provider by 2030 for small satellites and cube satellites primarily. But to do that, we have a range of different capabilities we're developing. So we have one of the largest hybrid 3D printers in Europe, which is located in our manufacturing facility, and we're using that to produce our engines. So there's a lot of vertical integration happening, which will be really convenient for customers and also kind of developing that localized capability for the UK.
I was going to say, building all this up, I know the UK has a lot of domestic talent and a great aerospace heritage. I wonder also about the sort of the workforce that you all are developing, the ecosystem that's growing around you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we collaborate really closely with a lot of universities across Scotland. There's a lot of excellent propulsion and engineering activity happening there. So we're a sponsor of GU Rocketry, which is the Glasgow University Rocketry Society. And we really think that those next generation of space leaders are really important to engage with now and pass that kind of knowledge on.
It's so interesting, especially in Scotland, to see the incredible developments happening. I'm thinking of Saxaverd, which I know you all work very closely with them. Just tell me how that's going.
Yeah, so Saxaverd, we're really excited to be kind of working with them. That's where we are looking to conduct our first demo orbital launch within the next year. And they've got a lot of construction going on there right now, but we've had some team members visit and engage with the local community there. And we really appreciate that relationship and hope to grow it.
Fantastic. So as you all continue to grow and develop your capabilities, let me know, what kind of customers are you looking to work with?
Sure. So primarily, we're really trying to target small and cube satellite customers. Our payload capacity is 315 kilos, so on the smaller launch side, but we're really trying to target that market niche where we can provide bespoke and agile launch services, kind of as an alternative to the rideshare solutions that are found in the U.S.
Okay, so agile meaning specifically, it's almost on demand, right?
Yeah, so what we're hearing from our customers is last-minute payload integration is a really key need that we're trying to kind of fulfill for them.
Fantastic, fantastic. Okay. Anything that we haven't hit that we wanted to cover?
We're pushing forward with our 70 kilonewton orbital engine testing at our test site in Midlothian, Scotland. So it's really exciting to see the team pushing forward with that. And having that in-house capability is really enabling rapid iterations of our technology so we can ensure that it's successful during our demo launch.
That's it for T-Miners for April the 15th, 2024. For additional resources from today's report, check out our show notes at space.n2k.com. We'd love to know what you think of our podcast. You can email us at space@n2k.com or submit the survey in the show notes. Your feedback ensures that we deliver the information that keeps you a step ahead in the rapidly changing space industry. We're privileged that N2K and podcasts like T-Minus are part of the daily routine of many of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, from the Fortune 500 to many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K's strategic workforce intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was mixed by Elliot Peltzman and Trey Hester, with original music and sound design by Elliot Peltzman. Our associate producer is Liz Stokes. Our executive producer is Jen Iben. Our VP is Brandon Carf. And I'm Alice Carruth. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.